His face fell.
Oh, now, about that.
He cleared his throat. Steris prodded, but in a moment Stennett had found an excuse, changed the topic, then politely retreated. What was that about? Wax said.
He's been cheating on her, Steris said absently. Naturally, the topic makes him uncomfortable.
Nice work, Wax said. You're very good at this.
I'm proficient at it.
I believe that's what I said.
There is a distinction, Steris said with a shake of her head. In this room there are true masters of social interaction. I am not one of them. I studied social norms, researched them, and now I execute them. Another woman might have sailed through that conversation and left him happy but distracted. I had to use blunt force, so to speak.
You are a bizarre woman, Steris.
Says the only man in the room with guns on his hips, she replied. A man who is unconsciously trying to push the earrings out of the ears of every woman we pass. You didn't notice Lady Remen losing her ring into her drink, did you?
Missed that.
Pity. It was entertaining. Here, step this way. We don't want to get into a conversation with Lord Booker's. He is dreadfully boring.
Wax followed her down three steps, passing a display shining with nuggets of tin that rattled at his passing, alongside pictures of famous Tin Eyes, including several sketches of the Lord Mistborn, who had been a Tin Eye before the Catasandra. Funny that Steris would remark on someone being boring.
You're thinking, Steris said, that it is ironic that I would note that someone is a bore, as I myself have a reputation for the same personality flaw.
I would not have phrased it like that.
It's all right, Steris said. As I have said many times before, I am aware of my reputation. I must embrace my nature. I recognize another bore as you might recognize a master allomancer, as a colleague whose arts I don't particularly wish to sample.
Wax found himself smiling.
As a side note,
Steris said softly as she steered them toward where the governor was speaking with the lord of House Erikel,
if you do find the murderer, steer me in her direction. I shall endeavor to fascinate her with details of our house finances. With luck, she'll fall asleep in her drink and drown, and I shall have my first kill.
Steris, that was actually amusing. She blushed. Then she got a conspiratorial look on her face.
I cheated, if you must know.
Cheated?
I know you enjoy witty conversation, she said, so I prepared earlier, writing myself a list of things I could say that you would find engaging.
Wax laughed. You have plans for everything, don't you?
I like to be thorough, she said. Though admittedly, sometimes I can be so thorough that I end up needing to plan how to best make my plans. My life ends up feeling like a beautiful ship in dry dock, built with 18 rudders pointing in different directions to be extra certain that a steering mechanism is in place.
She hesitated, then blushed again.
Yes, that quip was on my list.
Wax laughed anyway. Steris, I think this is the most genuine I've ever seen you.
But I'm being fake. I prepared the lines ahead of time. I'm not actually being diverting.
You'd be surprised at how many people do the same thing, Wax said. Besides, this is you, so it's genuine.
Then I'm always genuine.
I guess so. I just didn't realize it before. They stepped toward Innate, putting them close enough that the governor would notice them waiting. Nearby, other couples in groups shot them covert looks. As the lord of a major house, Wax outranked almost everyone in the room. Old noble titles were coming to matter less and less, but with Steris's money backing him, he'd been able to dig himself out of many of his debts. That, in turn, had allowed him to avoid foreclosures, and he'd been able to hold out until other investments came through. House Ladrian was once again one of the wealthiest in the city. Increasingly, that was more important than a noble pedigree. He found it unfortunate, though not surprising, how often noble birth aligned with economic and political power. The Lord Mistborn's laws, based upon the last emperor's ideal, were supposed to put power into the hands of common men. And yet the same groups just kept on ruling. Wax was one of them. How guilty should he feel?
Already I fear that I have made things too easy for men.
Drim, the governor's chief bodyguard and head of security, stepped up to Wax.
I suppose you'll be next, the thick-necked man growled. My men at the doors let you keep your guns, I hear.
Let me tell you, Drim, Wax said. If the governor is in the slightest bit of danger, you want a gun in my hands.
I suppose. A gun doesn't mean much to you anyway, does it? You could kill with the spare change in your pocket.
Or a pair of cufflinks, or the tacks holding the carpet to the floor.
Drim grunted.
Too bad about your deputy.
Wax snapped his attention on Drim.
Wayne, what about him?
He's a security threat, Drim said. Had to turn him away down below.
Wax relaxed.
Oh, all right then.
Drim smiled, obviously feeling he'd won something from the conversation. He backed up to take his place by the wall, watching those who came to speak with the governor.
You're not concerned about Wayne?
Steris asked softly.
Not anymore. I worried he'd find the party so boring he would wander off. Instead, the good man there kindly gave Wayne a challenge.
So, you're saying he'll sneak in?
If Wayne isn't in here somewhere already, Wax said, I'll eat your handbag and try to burn it for allomantic power.
They continued to wait. The governor's current interlocutor, Lady Shayna, was a long-winded blowhard, but after the political and financial support she'd given him, even the governor couldn't turn her away. Wax looked around, wondering where Wayne would be.
Lord Waxillium Landrian,
a feminine voice said.
I've heard about you. You're more handsome than the stories say.
He raised his eyebrows toward the speaker, a tall woman waiting to see the governor. Very tall. She had a few inches on him, at least. With luscious lips and a large chest, she had creamy skin and hair the color of gunpowder, and she was wearing a red dress missing most of its top half.
I don't believe we've met, Steris said, her voice cool.
I'm called Milan, the woman said.
She didn't bother to look at Steris, but inspected Wax up and down, then smiled in a mysterious way.
Lord Waxillium, you wear sidearms and a rough-style mistcoat to a cocktail party. Bold.
There is nothing bold about doing what one has always done, Wax said.
Flirting with a man while his fiancée stands beside him, however.
You have an interesting reputation, Milan continued. Are the things they say about you true?
Yes. She pursed her lips, smiling, expecting more. Instead, he met her eyes and waited. She shuffled, moving her cup from one hand to another, then excused herself, walking off.
Wow,
Steris said.
And they say I can make people uncomfortable.
You learn the stare early, Wax said, returning his attention to the governor.
In the back of his mind, he assessed the woman Milan and decided to keep an eye on her. Had that been Bleeder in disguise, trying to feel him out? Or had it been just another foolish partygoer with a bit too much wine in her and an inflated opinion of how men would respond to her?
Ross, this is going to be tough.
Wayne sauntered about the party, his tiny dining plate stacked with food as high as he could get it. Why did they always use such tiny plates at fancy parties? To keep people from eating too much?
Rusts. Rich folk didn't make sense. They gave away the most expensive booze in the city, then worried about people eating all of the little sausages?
Wayne was a rebel. He refused to play by their rules. Yes, he did. He quickly laid out a battle plan. The ladies with the little sausages came out from behind the east bar, while the west bar was preparing the salmon crackers. Tiny sandwiches to the north and desserts of various sorts to the south. If he made a round of the penthouse room in exactly 13 minutes, he could hit each station just as the servants were entering with fresh platters. They were starting to give him glares. A fellow knew he was doing his job right when he got those kinds of glares. Marcy stayed nearby, playing the part of Professor Hanlaney's assistant.
Wayne scratched at his beard. He didn't like beards, but Morrissey said the few Evanotype pictures of Professor Hanlonaise showed him wearing one. Hanlonaise was far thicker at the waist than Wayne was, too. That was great. You could hide all kinds of stuff in padding like that.
"I still can't believe you had all of this in the carriage," Morrissey whispered.
Then she stole one of his sausages. Right off his plate. Outrageous.
"My dear woman,"
Wayne said, scratching his head, where he wore a colorful terrace cap, a proud emblem of Hanlonaise's lineage.
"Being a qualified academic depends, before anything else, upon suitable preparation. I would no sooner leave my home without appropriate equipment for every eventuality than I would work in my lab without proper safety precautions."
"It's the voice that truly makes the disguise, you know," Morrissey said. "How do you do it?"
"Our accents are clothing for our thoughts, my dear," Wayne said. "Without them, everything we say would be stripped bare, and we might as well be screaming at one another. Oh, look, the dessert lady has chocolate pastries again. I do find those irresistible."
He stepped toward them, but a comment cut him off.
"Professor Hanlonaise?"
Wayne froze.
"Why, it is you," the voice said. "I didn't believe you'd actually come."
A tall man approached, wearing so much plaid that you could have strung him up on a pole and made a war banner out of him. On one hand, Wayne was pleased. He'd only had Morrissey's description of Hanlonaise to go on in creating his disguise, so the fact that he fooled someone who had obviously seen the professor's picture was impressive. On the other hand, damn. Wayne handed Morrissey his plate, giving her a stern glare that said, "Don't eat these." Then he took the newcomer's hand. That suit's fabric really was something. The mill that made it must have used up an entire year's quota of stripes.
"And you all?"
Wayne asked, pinching his voice. He'd found that big men like Professor Hanlonaise often had voices that sounded smaller than the person was. He was glad he'd been studying southern accents. Of course, he also injected some of a university accent into it, and set both on a base of Thermolian V sounds from the outer village where the professor had grown up. Getting a good accent was like mixing a paint to match one already on a wall. If you didn't blend just right, the flaws could look much worse than if you'd chosen a different color entirely.
"I'm Rem Mulder," the man said, shaking Wayne's hand. "You know, the paper on the Higgins effect?"
"Oh, yes,"
Wayne said, releasing the hand and stepping back. He gave a good impression of being nervous around so many people, and it sold better than two-penny drinks the day after Trufast. Indeed, Mulder was perfectly willing to give the supposed recluse plenty of space. That let Wayne speed up time around him and Morrissey only.
"What in harmony's wrists is he talking about?" Wayne hissed.
From her bag, Morrissey retrieved the book that she'd purchased at a nearby shop while Wayne was getting into his costume. She soon found the page she wanted.
"The Higgins effect has to do with the way a spectral field is influenced by magnets."
She flipped a few pages.
"Here, try this."
She rattled off some gibberish to Wayne, who nodded and dropped the speed bubble.
"The Higgins effect is old news," Wayne said. "I'm much more interested in the way that a static electric field produces similar results. Why, you should see the work we are near to completing."
Rem got pale in the face.
But, I was going to study the effect myself."
"Then you're behind by at least 3 years.
Why didn't you mention this in our letters?"
"And reveal my next discovery?"
Wayne said. Rem stumbled away, then dashed for the lift. Wayne had never seen a scientist move so quickly. You'd have thought someone was handing out free lab coats in the lobby.
"Oh dear," Morrissey said. "You realize the chaos this might cause in their field?"
"Yep," Wayne said, taking his plate of food back. "It will be good for them. It'll stop them from sitting around and thinking so much."
"Wayne, they're scientists. Isn't that their job?"
"Hell if I know," Wayne said, stuffing a little sausage in his mouth. "But Rusts, if it is, that would explain so much."
Governor Innate finished his conversation and turned toward Wax. Grim, the bodyguard, waved them forward.
He didn't like Wax, but from what Wax knew of the man, Drim was solid, loyal, and dependable. He understood that Wax wasn't a threat. Unfortunately, Drim didn't know the threat they were facing. A Chondra. It could be anyone. Wax wouldn't have been so trusting.
Wouldn't I? He thought, shaking the governor's hand. What if the Chondra is Drim? Have I considered that?
That was how Bleeder had gotten in to kill Lord Winsting, after all. She had been wearing the face of someone Winsting's men trusted.
Rusting iron on a hillside, Wax thought. This is going to be very, very hard.
Lord Waxillium, Innate asked, are you well?
I'm sorry, my lord, Wax said. My thoughts were called away for a moment. How is Lady Innate?
She had a moment of passing nausea, the governor said, kissing Steris's hand, and went home to lie down. I will tell her you asked after her. Lady Harms, you look lovely this evening.
And you are ever a gentleman, Steris replied, giving him a genuine smile.
Steris liked the governor, though politically they were opposites. Steris, calculatedly progressive, as she figured would be expected of new money looking to advance, while Innate was conservative. But that sort of thing didn't bother Steris. She liked people whose motives made sense, and she felt Innate's political record was orderly.
I hope Lady Alry will recover soon.
It is an ailment of nerves more than anything else, Innate said. She did not react well to what happened today.
You seem to be doing remarkably, Wax said, all things considered.
The would-be assassin was one of our newer guards and was mentally unhinged. He had terrible aim and likely didn't even actually intend to kill me.
The governor chuckled.
Would that the survivor would always send such enemies to me, and often around election season.
Wax cracked a forced smile, then glanced to the side.
That woman from before, the pretty one with the large eyes, stood nearby. Who else was suspiciously near?
Bleeder won't be someone I can spot easily, Wax thought. The faceless immortals have centuries of practice blending into human society.
What is your take on it, Lord Waxillium? Innate asked. What were the man's motives?
He was provoked to attack, Wax said. It was a distraction. Someone else killed your brother. They will try again for you.
Nearby, Drim stood up straight, glancing at him.
Curious, Innate said. But you're known for jumping at shadows, are you not?
Every lawman follows a bum lead on occasion.
I believe you'll find Lord Waxillium to be right far more often than he is wrong, my lord, Steris said. If he warns of danger, I would listen.
I will,
Innate said.
I want to meet with you, Wax said, so we can discuss important matters. Tomorrow at the latest. You need to hear what we're dealing with.
I will schedule it.
From Innate, that was a promise. Wax would have his meeting.
Lady Harms, might I ask after your cousin? I've yet to thank her for what she did today, even if the man's aim was off and I would have been safe anyway.
Marcy is well, Steris said. She should be coming up here tonight to...
Look at them.
The thought forced its way into Wax's head. Steris and the governor continued to speak, but he froze.
They dress in painted sequins. They drink wine. They laugh and smile and play and dance and eat and quietly kill. All part of Harmony's plan. All actors on a stage. That's what you are too, Waxillium Ladrian. It's what all men are.
A chill moved over Wax, like ants running across his skin. The thoughts in his head were a voice, like Harmony's, but rasping and crude, brutal, a terrible whisper. Wax was still wearing his earring. Bleeder had found out how to communicate with someone wearing a hemorrhagic spike. The murderer was in his head. 10. Wayne turned as the sausage lady passed. He intended to reach for another handful.
Instead, he got slapped. He blinked, at first assuming that the servers had finally gotten tired of him outthinking them. But the slapper hadn't been one of them. It was a child. He fixed his stare on the young girl as Maracy hurried back to his side. Why, this child couldn't be more than 15. And she'd slapped him.
"You," the girl said, "are a monster."
"I..."
"Remingtel Toxel," the girl said. "Do you think anyone in this party has heard that name before?"
"Well..."
"No, they haven't. I've asked. They all stand here using my father's incandescent lights, which he toiled for years to create, and nobody knows his name. Do you know why, Mr. Hanlonays?"
"I suspect I don't."
"Because you stole his designs, and with them his life. My father died clipless, destitute and depressed, because of men like you. You aren't a scientist, Mr. Hanlonays, whatever you claim. You're not an inventor. You're a thief."
"That part's right.
I'll have the better of you," the girl hissed, stepping up to him and poking him right in the gut, almost where he'd hidden his dueling canes. "I have plans. And unlike my father, I know that this world isn't just about who has the best ideas. It's about the people who can market those ideas. I'm going to find investors and change this city. And when you're crying, destitute and discredited, you remember my father's name and what you did."
She spun on her heel, long, straight blonde hair slapping him in the face, and stalked away.
"What the hell was that?"
Wayne whispered.
"The price of wearing someone else's likeness, I guess," Maracy said.
Rusting Woman sounded amused.
"Her daddy," Wayne said.
"She said, I killed her daddy."
"Yeah. Sounds like Hanlonays has some dirt in his past."
"Hanlonays? Right. Hanlonays, the professor."
"I've read broadsheet columns by that girl," Maracy said. "It's a real shame if it's true those inventions were stolen."
"Yeah," Wayne said, rubbing his cheek.
"Shame."
He eyed the plate of little sausages as it passed, but couldn't find the will to chase it down. The fun was gone, for some reason. Instead, he went looking for Wax.
"Excuse me," Wax said to the governor and Steris.
Both turned astonished eyes on him as he walked away. A rude move. He didn't let himself care. He stepped into the center of the room, instincts screaming at him.
"Guns out. Firefight coming. Find cover. Run!"
He did none of those things, but he couldn't keep his eye from twitching. With his steel burning, a spray of small translucent blue lines connected him to nearby sources of metal. He was in the habit of ignoring those. Now he watched them, quivering, shifting, the rhythm and pulse of 100 people in a room. Trays for food, jewelry, spectacles, metal parts in the tables and chairs. So much metal that made the framework for the lives of men and women. They were the flesh of civilization, and steel was now its skeleton.
"So you realize what I am," the voice said in his mind, feminine but rasping.
"No. What are you?"
Wax sent back. A test.
"Harmony spoke to you. I know that he did."
"You're a kolos," Wax said, using the wrong word on purpose.
"You dance for Harmony," the voice replied. "You bend and move at his direction. You don't care how poor an excuse for a god he is."
Wax wasn't certain. There was no way to be certain. But it seemed that Bleeder couldn't read his mind. The Conjurer could only send out thoughts. What was it Harmony had said? That hearing thoughts had come from preservation, but inserting them from ruin? Wax turned slowly about the room, watching those lines. Bleeder wouldn't have any metal on her. People who were metallically aware were more careful about things like that. The governor's guards, for example. Half of them carried guns, but the other half only dueling canes.
"How do you stand it, Wax?" Bleeder asked. "Dwelling among them. Like living up to your knees in sewage."
"Why did you kill Winston?" Wax asked out loud.
"I killed him because he had to die. I killed him because nobody else would.
So you're a hero, Wax said, turning about. She's close by, he thought, watching me. Who? Which one? And if he thought he'd figured it out, did he dare fire first?
The strike of lightning is not a hero, Bleeder said. The earthquake is not a hero. These things simply exist.
Wax started walking through the room. Perhaps Bleeder would try to move along with him. He kept his hands to the sides, a coin in each fist. No guns yet. That would provoke a panic.
Why the governor? Wax asked. He is a good man.
There are no good men, Bleeder said. Choice is an illusion, lawman. There are those created to be selfish, and there are those created to be selfless. This does not make them good or evil, any more than the ravaging lion is evil when compared to the placid rabbit.
You called them sewage.
Sewage is not evil. That does not make it desirable.
Bleeder's voice in his mind seemed to take on more personality as she spoke. Soft, haunting, morose, like Bloody Tan had been.
Someone else moves us.
And you? Wax asked. Which are you? Wolf or rabbit?
I am the surgeon.
The woman, the beauty in red, followed him. She tried to be surreptitious about it, walking over to a group to meet them and chat, but she moved parallel to Wax. There was another person following, too, a short man in a server's outfit carrying a tray of food. He made his rounds, but the other servers moved clockwise. Wax was going counterclockwise. Were they close enough to hear him speaking? Not with natural ears. Perhaps Bleeder could burn tin, if that was the power she'd chosen for the evening.
You are a surgeon, too, Bleeder said. They call you Lord. They smile at you. But you aren't one of them. If only you could be truly free. If only... I follow the law,
Wax whispered. What do you follow? Bleeder gave no reply to that. The whisper, perhaps, had kept her from hearing.
The governor is corrupt, Bleeder said. He spent years covering for his brother, but in truth, he would have done better covering for himself.
Wax looked to the side. He'd circled the room at this point, almost back to where he'd started. That server had followed all the way.
I have much work to do, Bleeder said. I need to free everyone in this city. Harmony crushes his palm against society, smothering it. He claims to not interfere, but then moves us like pieces on a board.
So you'll kill the governor, Wax said. That will somehow free the city.
Yes, it will, Bleeder said. But of course, I can't kill him yet, Wax. I haven't even murdered your father yet.
Wax felt suddenly cold, but his father was already dead. He spun, hand on his gun, and met the eyes of the server. The man froze, his eyes wide. Then he ran. Wax cursed, dashing after and flipping a coin out in front of himself. It spun in the air, but the waiter ducked behind a group of people. Wax gritted his teeth and let the coin drop without pushing on it, instead unslinging vindication. This prompted cries of worry from those in the party. The waiter ducked behind groups of people, ready to dodge Wax. Fortunately, he, or she, or whatever, wasn't ready for Wayne, who surged up between two plump women with cups of wine and flung himself at the waiter. Both went down in a heap. Wax slowed, raising his gun, taking aim. He couldn't give Bleeder a chance to use Allomancy or Ferrochemy, particularly if he was wrong about her using tin right now. A shot to the head wouldn't kill a Chondra, he guessed, but it should slow her down. Wax just had to be certain not to hit Wayne in the wrong... The governor's guards piled on top of Wayne and Bleeder.
Wax cursed, dashing forward, vindication up beside his head and mistcoat flapping behind him. He leaped over cowering partygoers, pushing off tacks in the floor to get some height, and came down near the group of struggling guards.